Welcome back, everyone, to another edition of the Why Marketing Podcast. I'm Rusty Pepper, and this week I'm excited to introduce our new co-host for season four, Peter Horst. He's also one of my original guests on the podcast way back in season one. So, Peter, welcome back to the Why Marketing Podcast.
Thanks so much, Rusty. It's great to be back with you.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you finishing out the season with me. So for those that are listening, can you just give them just a quick who you are and why you decided to jump in with me on this?
Sure. So I am currently wearing a new hat. Back in January of last year, I took the role of CEO of PSB Insights, which is a research consultancy. And we work with a bunch of really cool, iconic companies around the world, doing the full spectrum of research from qualitative to quant to brand tracking, ad testing, some pretty interesting advanced analytics work we do with product optimization. So it's been a really exciting year, especially given all the challenges of the pandemic. But I come to that role not after a career in market research, but really as a marketer, wearing generally the CMO hat. I most recently led teams at the Hershey Company, Capital One, General Mills, TD Ameritrade, a company in the cybersecurity industry. So a pretty broad range of companies. So I've been in large, small, B2B, B2C, variety of industries. And throughout all that, I was a big champion of and believer in insights and the power of insights to drive big ideas. So when I had the opportunity to go deep in the world of insights and analytics, I jumped at it and saw it as a chance to really learn and grow as a marketer, as a business person. So it's been a lot of fun, and I'm glad to be back here with you. I really enjoyed our conversation, and I'm looking forward to working with you as we continue with fascinating conversations like this one today.
Now, one thing you omitted, and I'm a big fan of, is you wrote a really good book a couple years ago. And I know I've given that out as gifts quite a bit.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes. So after I left Hershey, I spent a few years doing the consulting, speaking, and writing thing. And in the course of that, as I was making the rounds speaking at conferences, I was talking about this interesting topic that was developing around fake news and brands getting into hot water and political and social issues after the 2016 election. And that turned into a book, Marketing in the Fake News Era, that really looked at what are these dynamics that are buffeting brands and how do you navigate them. And honestly, I thought it would be a short-lived topic, and I've taken the risk of writing a book that's relevant for a year or two. Unfortunately for all of us, maybe fortunately for the book, it's more relevant than ever, and the issues have become that much more pressing, and the challenges to brands have become that much greater. So yes, thank you for remembering that.
Oh, I've got one actually sitting right behind me on my bookshelf. So what's great is with your background with insights, can't be any more relevant than it is right now in the world that we're living in. And I'm excited to bring in our guest because I know she's been sitting there waiting patiently for us to get her introduced. I'm really curious to get her perspective. So you ready to get her introduced?
Let's do it.
We've got Larissa Waylega, VP of Marketing at Zbart. Larissa, welcome to the Why Marketing Podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Before we dive into your background and kind of your role there at Zbart, we're going to do a speed round, get to know you a little bit better. And Peter, you're involved in this as well.
Okay.
So I've got a round of three questions for both you and Peter. And the fourth one's going to be just for you, Larissa. Y'all ready to get started?
Ready. Let's do it.
Favorite day of the week?
Larissa, take it away.
Friday.
For me, I think it's Saturday because I take Friday to decompress and reset, and Saturday's okay, here we go, fresh start.
For some reason, I don't know, things like big ideas happen for me on Fridays, which seems really weird because it's the end of the week, but it's always the day my team's like, oh, there's another email coming because there's another idea. So I don't know, Friday fun days.
Maybe it's because everything that's been percolating throughout the week, it all comes together on Fridays for you. That's I can see that. All right, next question. First celebrity crush.
I can jump in on that one. I think it would be Susan Day of the Partridge Family. That was the first one that comes to mind for me. I was a big fan.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Okay. Mine was probably Patrick Swayze. Everyone knows that Dirty Dancing is my favorite movie, and I saw it really young. I'm still surprised my parents let me watch it so young, but it's been a classic. So I'd probably say Patrick Swayze.
Those are two really good ones. All right, the next question. Rate your karaoke skills from 1 to 10, with 10 being like a Mariah Carey type.
5.
Okay.
Wow, that's a tough one because I have successfully managed to not do karaoke more than 2 or 3 times in my life. So I would probably say more like a 3 because I have such terrible knowledge of most popular music. So I'm struggling every time I do that.
Actually, I have an acting minor, random, I know. But so I have a bit of a background in performing arts. So that's why I'm not going to give myself like, I'm not Mariah. I'm not scary either.
Cool. See, if I was to answer that, I would give myself a 10. Everybody else would give me about a 2. So in my mind, I am fantastic. I'm like crushing it. And then everybody else that's listening to it is just running for the door.
So self-awareness is not a core competency then.
Right? Definitely not. But the confidence to get out there and do it, no problem at all. So
perfect.
This last one is for you, Larissa. What brand inspires you the most?
Right now, I would say it is Chevrolet. I've had a chance to recently have the news on a little bit more in my house than I normally do, and been paying attention to commercials a little bit more. And I'm fascinated by one of the more recent commercials around the way that they just dug into how I'm sure all the different personas that Chevrolet has. And really, I was like captivated. I'm like, yeah, let's go EV future. It was a very well done commercial. And I've always watched Mary Barra. I'm a huge fan. And I would say it was probably Chevrolet and maybe even GM overall.
That's great. That's got probably relevant too, because based on your role and what you've spent, that is an area that automotive is an area that is near and dear to you because that's what you live and breathe every day. So I don't think you could have teed that segue into the actual main part of our podcast than you did. So great job there. So if you don't mind, let's talk about you're now the VP of marketing at ZBART. Who is ZBART? And talk about your career journey a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. ZBART is an automotive aftermarket franchise company. So right away, that always conjures up these, oh my gosh, that's so much. And sometimes it does feel like a lot in the verticals of the business that we're constantly marching after. Like you just said, obviously automotive is a huge part of our business, but franchising is a very large part of our business too. We're very active in the International Franchise Association. Number of us are on different committees. We stay very connected to that because franchising is also a very large part of our business too. We have 400 locations in 37 countries with 1,200 processing centers. We do have corporate owned stores too, which are great to have, especially for the marketing team who gets to test a lot of programs in those stores too. But that's really who we are. We've been around for over 60 years. So we are a legacy brand. In fact, we're one of the I think we're number 87 on the franchise list of oldest brands. We're very passionate about the legacy that we have. And there's a lot of pride in that legacy too. But when you say automotive aftermarket, it's really, we're all about appearance protection. So products and services that keep your vehicle looking like new for as long as you own it. In the Midwest, rust is still an issue for vehicles. So we were the founders of Rust Protection in 1959. So between that, car detailing, films, window tint, anything that you can do to your vehicle to make it look and keep it looking like new, that's you call ZBART. So that's who we are. I've been with ZBART. It will be, I believe, 12 years this summer. Although before I came to ZBART, I was at Campbell Ewald out of Detroit and then Doner out of Detroit too. At the time, they were two of the largest advertising agencies, probably still are. But at the time, it was really great I started there, get my experience from the ground up. I was the traffic coordinator, running the bags all over the agency, but I would never trade that experience for anything. I learned so much about how all the pieces kind of work together to create a successful advertising campaign. And then further on, learning more about data and analytics, I was primarily on the direct marketing side. So that's really where we always talk a lot about some of my friends from past agency life that even though the direct mail side wasn't the sexiest side of the agency, you learned, I think, the most, because you really understood not only how to develop a creative campaign, how to talk about messaging or strategy, but then as we were, you guys were talking about before, how the data analytics played a part in moving a campaign forward or in your strategy for developing a business. So I was really fortunate at Campbell Ewald. I had some great clients. My franchising experience started with Wyndham Worldwide. They were amazing clients, still connected with them today, and then had some other experiences. Obviously, everybody in Detroit worked on GM at some point, and I did for about a year, and then moved into Doner and worked on ADT and Things Remembered. So just a number of different brands that gave me a lot of great experience. And then I came over to Zbart and been there ever since. Like I said, started in the field, which is exactly where you need to start, because if you can't have conversations with franchise owners to help them understand that you do understand what happens in their business every day and get that understanding, the trust level isn't as strong. So was very fortunate to do that for about 4 years or so, and then moved into the director of marketing position. And really most of my time in that role up until the last year with this next step was rebranding the company. So we could get into that, and I'm happy to answer questions about that too, but it's been a constant story. And I'm just so grateful to have had the experiences that I've had and the experiences that I hope to have in the future.
You came into your role in the middle of the pandemic. How has that been helpful? Do you think it's been, was it a harder transition? Was it an easier transition? Talk about that a little bit.
It was definitely a different view for sure. We are fortunate that we right away, March, whatever day that was at this point, happened. I'm going to use the word pivoted very quickly too, in that there was a need for the opportunity to help our local communities. And we quickly worked with the partners that, just like everyone else, we had to make some budget cuts too, but there were some partners that we were able to keep on. And we worked with a lot of those partners to talk about what makes sense for us at this point. It's not about making sales. It's not about selling franchises. It's just about, oh my gosh, how can we come to the front line? How can we help and what can we do? And so many of our franchise owners and our corporate stores ended up offering free wipe downs for first responder vehicles in all of our local markets. We had a product that was able to kill the coronavirus. So we just put the message out there, and I have pictures upon pictures of police and ambulance rolling into Zbart's, getting that wiped down and then going back on to do their job and serve our community. So that was really pretty amazing. I still get goosebumps talking about it because everybody just jumped in and did it. From the guys who are at the store, our technicians, to our sales professionals and our managers and our owners just said, I got to do something. This is really all I can do right now, knowing what's going on. I'm going to do it. And it really has shown from that date how much our communities support our local stores since that was done, kind of March, April timeframe, and maybe a little bit into May. The community involvement and the support that we've seen has been just astronomical. And so that was that. I'm really glad that we were able to do that because we were deemed an essential business at the time.
That's such a great example of doing something good for the community in a way that's totally central to your core business and not a disconnected add-on.
Right.
I'm curious, for so many industries, it's been really interesting. There have been devastating impacts. There have been incredible growth opportunities. It would seem that maybe for your business, there might be some kind of silver linings in the sense of disinfectants and cleaners and so forth that I imagine may have taken off. Did you see any kind of surprising positives come from what was otherwise a terrible situation?
We did. There's two, actually. One, we were right at the cusp of relaunching our brand and getting into these very meaningful conversations with our potential customers and people that were interested in our brand. We had done a numbers of years of research, and we were literally just at that point of about to launching our first campaign, and then this hit. So we already had a lot of insights about the two services that we have that really drive interest in our stores and in our brand. And the two of them, as you just mentioned, they're very polar opposite. One is cleaning. People are very interested in understanding more about interior detailing. The type of consumers that we're talking to don't really have the time to do it themselves, but they're the ones who clean their house. And they're the ones who are all about keeping their lives neat and clean and organized. We learned so much about that type of consumer that we were ready to go. And we knew that antibacterial was also in their mind too. So making that connection, we've definitely seen a spike in interior cleanings and interior detailing as well. I think partially because of what had happened here too. The other part of it though, is that people are holding on to their vehicles longer. The average car is about 12 years old on the road right now. It doesn't mean that people keep their cars for 12 years. On average, it's about 6 or so right now. But because of that, and because a lot of where we're based in the United States is in the Midwest, there's still that potential for rust. And rust is a huge part of our business still and continues to be as the average age of vehicles increases. So not only the idea of keeping that car looking like new, but the idea of preventing rust is a really great opportunity for a consumer to make sure that when they're ready to turn that vehicle in, that the resale value is as large as it could possibly be for them. If you go look at Kelley Blue Book right now, it still states the amazing condition is rust-free. So if you're keeping that vehicle on average for 6 years or maybe even up to 12, it's still going to happen. And so there's a great opportunity there too. So adding that with what we've seen in our era of COVID right now, the other part of that is where all of the car companies were talking maybe 5 years or so ago about what are we going to do? Millennials don't want to buy cars. They're using mass transit and all of these things. And now we can't sell cars to them. What are we going to do? They quickly found out, and we all found out, that's just not the case, that people really now, especially millennials, as they come into their own, are having families, are getting married, are developing partnerships, whatever they're doing, they're not trusting mass transit. The trust in mass transit, aside from or including Uber, is very low. And so the interest to purchase their own vehicle, whether new or used, is very high now. So that anytime that new or used vehicle sales increase, naturally ZBART has an opportunity there too.
Got it. I always say marketing is one of the toughest jobs because you've got so many constituents and stakeholders and opinion givers, and marketing is common sense. So everyone can do it, right? So everyone's telling you, you know, how to do it. But marketing in a franchise environment brings a whole extra layer of stakeholder complexity. What are some of the particularly unique challenges that come in marketing in a franchise environment in terms of making the brand consistent, in terms of getting everybody on board and getting campaigns sold in and all that sort of good stuff?
That's a very good question. There's a couple things that we think about and we put at the kind of top of our list when we're talking about new campaigns or new ideas or even revising current ones. Some of the things that are important in a franchise system, not just ours, but everyone in general. One is communication. We do have a dealer marketing committee that's made up of a number of different franchise owners, some larger volume, smaller volume, multi-store, single store. We wanted to have a nice cross section. So we try to meet with that team at least twice a year, but there's oftentimes even subcommittees out of that based on what's going on where we bring them in, talk about ideas, talk about results of programs. But that important part of what's happening in their store is the connection. We know we're not in their store every day. They are. They're living it every single day. So to be able to give that other side of the coin to us, to be able to give us the understanding of whatever might be happening, the questions that we have, is just invaluable. And do we always agree? No, we don't. But we do agree to disagree. And we do try to make our thoughts and ideas and decisions based on results and based on data. So I find that staying in communication is number one important. The other one is education. Franchise overall, unless you purchased like a marketing franchise, which there aren't too many of those out there, but unless you did that, you didn't purchase a franchise to be a marketer. You purchased a franchise to run your store, maybe buy some more stores, and eventually hire people to then run your stores for you. You didn't purchase a franchise to become a marketer. And we set that up very early on in the discovery process with franchise prospects and throughout. We educate them, we connect them with data, with analytics, with understanding the customer journey. We go through it, what every step means, what we measure at every step, and coupled with what our brand means, that's really what I believe has driven the success so far and the increased success that we've had.
Very cool. So you've got the ultimate omni-channel environment. You've got a global brand, you've got local stores on the corner of First and Main. I imagine you use the full spectrum of digital channels. You can measure foot traffic. How do you get your arms around all of that data? How do you think about developing and implementing your marketing strategies across all those different dimensions?
I will definitely say that research was first and foremost the number one place where we were able to grab this and start from there. We not only understanding where our brand is positioned in the market, how it's thought about with consumers, how it's connected and or what it looks like against our competitors too. But having that research and first developing that brand positioning and then developing our personas and then developing our customer journey has been, we go to that every single day. That's what we're talking about because it can get, there's so many things you can measure, right? All day long with all, like you said, all the channels we're using, whether it's social, anything online, even the couple offline programs that we have too, there's a lot of data. And what do you measure? And we understand that based on the stakeholder, what's important to them. So our franchise owners don't really care about clicks and they don't really care about cost per clicks. They care about how many leads did you drive to my store that day? And connecting that though, I care about how many leads did you close at your store that day? So having that connection too with our sales and operations team, we have a very strong relationship with them. We all make decisions together, sales, operations, and marketing. And that has also been very valuable to our growth as well. But like I said, when we talk about metrics and where they come from and what's important, every stakeholder knows their metric at ZBART, but specifically on my team as well. They understand that I'm responsible for this and I know what it drives in this next step. So if this isn't here, this isn't going to move the needle. And I found that that's been very important for us as we prepared and planned for growth.
So when you look at your audience, you've got your customer base is your franchisees. That's who you're selling to and you're supporting. But you also have the end consumer. If I go in, buy a car, the dealership, and they give me the options to go get rust protection, all these other services, what does that customer journey look like as well? Because if I don't have brand awareness on ZBART as a customer, you're relying on the dealership. So from that training element, are the franchisees the ones training the dealers? How does all that work? And what do you see the biggest challenges and the biggest opportunities in that segment?
Another great question. Our partnerships with car dealers are a very large part of our business. So a car dealer has the opportunity to partner with a franchise owner or corporate store in any of our markets to be able to bring our services to their consumers as they're ready to purchase their vehicle, whether new or used. Yes, the training is very important on the franchise owner side, not only to first show that car dealer the profit opportunity that's really there, but also to help them understand why these products and services are still so important to their consumers. So between the training and creating partnerships with car dealers, number one, after that, our most successful franchise owners are the ones who are constantly in contact with the car dealers and basically talking about what's happening, what went well, what didn't happen. If there's turnover in the dealership, retraining, they're right on top of that relationship all the time. From a brand awareness standpoint, when we talk about, there's two opportunities to make sure that car dealers see the connection and value of the brand. One is the local store marketing that our franchise owners do. If they're investing in the brand and creating brand awareness opportunities within the media that they purchase, plus anything that we're doing to support, that's already driving that trust in the brand with our car dealer partners, which then drives trust with the consumers that are purchasing the vehicles. And then the other part is really just, again, staying on top of what our brand means for them through partnerships with the NADA, any other kind of car dealer networks. Like I said, it's a very complicated business. We're always trying to stay on top of franchising, automotive, car dealers, retail. So we're all trying to be experts in those places. And so that's something that always attracted me to Zeebart. And continues too, is the opportunity for further education and networking within all of those verticals that are so important to our business.
It is an impressively diverse business. It's easy to think of, oh, undercoating. You've got products, you've got services, you've got services for giant fleet owners, all the way down to window tinting for me as a consumer.
Right.
In that sort of vast complexity, how do you think about product innovation, managing the life cycle of products over time? How does that happen?
Yeah, the product innovation definitely comes and is connected with that idea that I mentioned before, which was staying connected to the opportunities within our vertical. So we attend SEMA, we attend APEX, we're part of the International Detailing Association, part of the International Window Film Association. So we're all in with every vertical of our business to make sure that we're staying on top of products and services that could be of value. And then obviously that's a part of consumer research all the time, is what else could I provide your vehicle? What challenges are you having that our brand can help you fulfill or help you correct with keeping the appearance of your vehicle looking like new, like I said, for as long as you own it. So the innovation comes through consumer research and comes through those partnerships with all those associations as well. So I think that's it's always been a tenet of our brand. Like I said, something that was really great brand research, the very heavy research that we did about 5 years ago, was we also authored our values. And it's interesting because I continue to think about them, that they always were there, but they never were authored. Like they were never written down to a place that we're like, oh yeah, this is us. We get this, right? And I can honestly say that they are so interwoven into the DNA of our brand every day. It's just awesome to see.
It is extraordinary. I had a similar experience in a past life where working at a company that had never articulated a mission statement, even though it was very mission-driven. But the act of writing it, the act of declaring it and putting it on posters just unleashed an incredible amount of energy and dialogue, and asking people at every corner of the company, are we living up to this? Are our products and policies and services actually delivering on this? So it really is extraordinary.
Simply it gives you that foundation, right? Yeah. Like it's the center, it's like the core. And if you're ever almost, I feel like, lost, you just go back to it. Okay, are we doing this? Are we not? Are we making a decision on this? Are we not? And if we're not, pivot.
And as you said, even though they were there all the time, somehow shining a light on it and putting words to it on paper makes them come to life in a much more powerful way.
Yes.
Really interesting.
As a head of marketing, CMO, VP of marketing, how much ownership does marketing have over that process?
I would say we were a very strong owner and leader of that process. When we were talking about defining our brand, we knew we couldn't define our brand because we weren't ready to. We've always had an authored mission statement and we've always had an authored vision statement, but those values weren't put down on paper. They weren't synthesized. And so when we stepped away, we did an offsite brand workshop, the best thing ever. And we talked about all these great questions and thoughts and ideas that brought us to really dissecting and saying, yes, these are our five values. On top of we did revise the mission statement and we even revised our vision statement too, because our CEO was so connected to the fact that he really wanted to make sure that we were a customer-driven company. And in automotive, I think most brands now are realizing that, but I feel like automotive was a little bit behind the curve from other verticals, where they were putting the customer's needs at the center of their brand. And we had that great foresight to do that. And so out of all that came, basically said, so go do that. Said, okay, let's go. And so that's where a lot of these things came out. So having that brand workshop really drove our company forward in thinking about our customer first.
That's fantastic that you were able to act as and feel like the owner. I think in some situations, it can be necessary to think of yourself as sort of catalyst and champion, and the whole ownership can get tricky because there may be a lot of people who feel ownership, or there may be people who don't quite understand that really it's all about the brand at the end of the day. So you almost have to win people over with the energy of the process as lead flag carrier, but without seeming to presume to be an owner. So where you do have that.
Feeling me, we're on the same page.
No, but it's great that you had that sort of open door to do that. Not everybody does.
I was very grateful, very thankful, and it continues to, our entire executive team is on the same page with it and really driving it forward. And something else that kind of came out of it is that, who is your customer? We asked that question at that brand workshop, right? Who is your customer? And you brought up the fact that we have two, but we look at it as we have three. Our three is not just, it's not just about CX. So it's not just about the customer experience. And we say it's not just about FX, which is the franchise owner experience, but it's also about EX, and it's about our employee experience too. Because if our employees, both our employees within our corporate locations and even at corporate in Troy, Michigan, if they're not feeling it and they're not understanding our brand and they're not seeing the value and they're not feeling like they're a part of that community that's driving something forward, then we're missing the boat. And the tiering of that is very important. So out of this brand workshop and this rebranding, we had this huge, our very first step was to launch this to our employees. It didn't go anywhere else. It was to them first. And that really drove the excitement within the company of, wow, look where we were, look where we are now. We see our continued vision. We've been very successful for over 60 years, but we want another 60. And that was a very exciting day. And I, again, can't say grateful really is the best word for being on a team that we're all on the same page.
That's great. But speaking of who's your customer, you recently launched a campaign called Z Moms, which shines a light on women in a field that's male associated, I would say, for the most part. Tell us a little bit about kind of the genesis of that.
It's one of those that just kind of came to be. We were sitting in a room and talking about, we knew that that's one of our opportunities is to talk a little bit more to moms and specifically women. That detailing or cleaning aspect overall is very important to them. So we said, we want to just do something real, and thoughts and ideas of things like focus interviews and whatever seemed kind of okay. So we thought about the idea of just bringing them in, and we detailed all their cars. We talked to them before they got their car detailed. Then we talked to them after they got their car detailed. And we just wanted to make it very real. Not, there was nothing staged about that at all. Every single thing was real. And then put together into this story that we really felt was very relatable to anyone. And then we brought in the kids, and that was even better because the difference in personalities of all of them too. It was fun to see how you'd put the kids on the stage or at the table, and then you'd have the moms and you're like, oh yeah, that's your kid. Okay. So it was just something very simple, easy. It was a very low budget. It didn't break the bank. And we just really got a lot of engagement. And that's what we wanted, is we always want to be seen as real and seen as partners with our, like I said, employees, our franchise owners, and our consumers, that we're just here to help. And we felt that story captured that essence.
That's a great example of insight-driven, authentic marketing. So hats off to you. And thank you for that inspiration. And thank you for really a fascinating look at a really interesting, complex business that most of us really don't know a whole lot about. Thank you for the insights. It's been a real pleasure.
It was a lot of fun. Larissa, thanks so much for being on. And Peter, I'm going to let you put a bow on it.
Thank you all. Larissa, thank you for joining us. It's been fascinating. And we look forward to our next episode. And Rusty, thank you. And have a great day, all.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers. Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning into the Why Marketing Podcast. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. And give us a 5-star rating while you're at it. Until the next time.